Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott. Fellas, I gotta say, on YouTube, you were taking it in the comments for some of your picks videos. Now, I don't think it's fair because people were mocking you after the games were over and the nameless commenters didn't ever state their picks. What say you?
I mean... I'll take that. The story of season or of the start of the season, like week one for any year in the CFL, is upsets all over the place. I went and looked. The Dogs were 4-0 last season. So when I go ahead and I take all these Dogs, and by the way, I went 3-1 straight up. Like, I'll take that 3-1 week one. It's not my fault the Dogs were not barking. And not only not barking, the Dogs were dead, okay? The Dogs got shot. It was like an old yeller behind the woodshed situation. That's not my fault. Hopefully the picks are better in week two. Against the spread, straight up, we're good. Money line, you made money.
Well, I got to get my bearings. My picks were atrocious in week one. But you got to see what these teams actually are when they get on the field. But I've had a rough weekend, gentlemen, in terms of getting it from all sides, from the commenters on YouTube, from the video people at BC Place. JC Abbott's face has been plastered everywhere, ridiculed by all corners. I can take it, though.
I won't ridicule you for eating some healthy greens, brother.
Do your thing. It was on top of a nice pasta bowl. I do want to make clear, anyone who saw the video, if it was circulated online or you were on BC Place, I was not eating a salad. I want to make that abundantly clear. It was some broccolini on top of a pasta bowl, and I wasn't actually regurgitating that. That was some shifty video editing from the BC Place staff.
That's a gross thought, man. Eat your greens.
It really is.
They're healthy for you, kids. Let's get it going. We're discussing two teams who plummeted down Three Down Nation's power rankings.
The Rough Riders adding veteran running back Kadeem Carey.
Austin Mack ripping the CFL's top 50 players list.
Edmonton's new, or shall we say throwback, uniforms.
Marcus Crandall formally retiring at 51 years old.
Toronto unveiling its Grey Cup rings.
Hodge, is it me or you?
Well, I tried to steal yours last time, so I'll finish it off. And Milt Stegall releasing his first statement since the sudden passing of his 20-year-old son. But first,
the BC Lions and Calgary Stampeders were the two highest risers in Three Down Nation's power rankings following impressive week one wins, both jumping four, count them, four spots. Which team were you most impressed with between the Leos or the Stamps, and why?
I mean, I'll start with BC. I thought Nathan Rourke looked fantastic. We're going to talk about him more later on in the show. I thought their new look defense was very solid. But the answer here is the Calgary Stampeders. I mean, the Calgary Stampeders have been falling each and every year to the point that they missed the playoffs for the first time in 20 years last season. There's a reason why they had the first overall pick in the 2025 CFL draft. And I've been very skeptical as to whether or not they did enough this offseason to really get back into certainly home playoff contention or possibly even playoff contention. I think we all know Vernon Adams Jr. is a very talented quarterback. I've touted some of their receiving moves that they've made. But guys, the story of this game was their defense. They completely took away, for most of the game, Kenny Lawler. Yeah, he was targeted, or yeah, he had a touchdown, but he was targeted 13 times. You're going to score at some point if that is the number of targets you get. Yeah, Bo Levi Mitchell threw for 300 yards, but he put 50 passes in the air, right? When you throw 50 pass attempts, inevitably you're going to hit somewhat of a high yardage total. But the stat that really stood out to me, boys, that I thought was the most telling was, first of all, 38 points without a Vernon Adams Jr. touchdown pass. That was sensational for Calgary. The other was, at the end of this week, Hamilton ranks eighth in the CFL at 5.38 yards per play. That is second lowest in the CFL. That is a truly abysmal number. And I thought Calgary deserved a ton of credit for the way in which they completely shut down Greg Bell. They were the better team on specials. They were the better team on offense. They were simply the better team. And for Calgary Stampeders fans who haven't seen that many wins, especially at home over the last year or two, what a great start for that franchise.
It truly was an impressive win by the Stampeders, and you note that defense. Marquel Lee, in his first start as the middle linebacker there for the Stampeders, big question mark going into this season for that team. He looked sensational at middle linebacker, but I have to pick the BC Lions here, and maybe it's because I got a chance to be there, but the Lions, we knew they had one way to be effective and a contender this season, and that was Nathan Rourke being sensational. And boy, was he ever sensational in that opener. You know, 324 yards through the air, three touchdowns, another 54 yards on the ground. He looked poised. He looked calm. He looked completely at peace. And dare I say it, gentlemen, there were moments in that game where Nathan Rourke looked like he was having fun. He took a long 22-yard run up the middle, flipped the ball up to himself. I've never seen him celebrate like that. And he told me after the game, that's been a focus of his this offseason, is trying to take himself less seriously, trying to have more fun while playing the game of football. Looks like it's mission accomplished on that front. And certainly it should put the entire league on notice, because if Rourke is going to play at that level this season, anything is possible for BC.
How much time we got, boys? Because I could spend all of it talking about the Canadian star, dare I say, superstar, Nathan Rourke. Man, he looked amazing in a quarterback matchup. Excuse me if I could talk. I was thinking about Nelly Korda in golf. I don't know why. But anyway, in a Canadian quarterback matchup that was billed as the first since the Toronto Maple Leafs last won the Stanley Cup, Nathan Rourke destroyed Trey Ford. Let's not get it twisted, okay? Nathan Rourke looked awesome, both in the pocket, outside the pocket, on the run, throwing the football, running the football himself. He was in total command of a new offense. Then you look at the other side, and you had Trey Ford in a bad way, fellas. As much as I love him scrambling around and making plays, it's great. And that one scramble that he had to the right and then all the way back to the left and then threw it for a big gain was amazing. But he, to me, needs to develop as a quarterback in the pocket to be more effective. Nathan Rourke has clearly done that. That, to me, guys, was the biggest juxtaposition in this football game, is the differences between those two. Now, Rourke has had a more consistent string of starting games in 2022. Ford has been in and out, and I think yanked around largely by Chris Jones when he was there. And then, you know, after the team got off to an 0-1 start, was thrown into that situation. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. And he's in a new offense too. But I'm trying to make an apples-to-apples comparison here, because they're both in new offenses. And there are some pieces that are new, and there are some pieces that are familiar for both quarterbacks. And Nathan Rourke looked like a guy who was on a mission. And I think Buck Pierce, he won't say this, but stuck the middle finger up to a bunch of people that didn't think that he would have that BC Lions team ready to play with, you know, the injury issues and him not necessarily being great in a press conference setting. So to the haters, he gave them a big double Brian Cox Jr., if you know what I'm talking about. So I thought that it could be super beneficial for the league if Nathan Rourke continues to play at this type level. Let's see if he can do it consistently. I believe that he can. But to me, the story of that game, when I think about it, fellas, and I know we're talking about the two teams that rose, but was that Trey Ford needs to develop. He needs to be a better passer. You can't live and die, because you will ultimately die in the pros, running for your life on every single play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought BC, just like Calgary, did a great job of shutting down a good run game, right? Edmonton was number one by quite a considerable margin running the football in 2024. Obviously, Trey Ford, a big part of that, but Justin Rankin, early in the season, they had Kevin Brown back there. Javon Leak got sprinkled in. Didn't seem to matter who was in the backfield for Edmonton. They were chewing up yardage, and that simply did not happen for the Edmonton Elks in Vancouver on Saturday night, once the smoke cleared following Snoop Dogg's performance. That, to me, is a credit to BC's defense. I did not think Mike Awe had a very good year last year with the Calgary Stampeders. He looked rock solid at middle linebacker for the Lions. I thought their secondary did a great job rallying to the football. And I actually thought the only knock on them early on was how poorly they were maintaining contain on mm-hmm. Trey Ford. The pass rushers, the edge rushers had their ears pinned back and they were ripping up the field. And it's like, guys, you can't do this against Trey Ford. You could do it against eight quarterbacks in the CFL. You cannot do this against Trey Ford. And I thought that's why Trey Ford had success early. My issue with Trey Ford is the average play has to be better. And here's what I mean by that. Trey Ford will have at least one play over the course of the game that is like literally an 11 out of 10, where it's just jaw-dropping. And I'd imagine even like the most hardcore of BC Lions fans were watching that scramble that Justin referenced going, holy crap, I'm so glad that I got to see that, right? It happened against my team, but I'm still so, oh my gosh, like that is a world-class, unbelievable, highlight of the year type of play. The issue is that Trey Ford has a bunch of plays throughout the game that are 3 out of 10 or 4 out of 10, where it's like, okay, I'm throwing the 7-yard curl, but I'm sailing it, which means that my receiver has to expose his ribs to a defensive back. They don't like that. Or it goes right over the receiver's head, and now it could potentially be a pick for a defender deep in the secondary, right? Even when on some of those throws that he's making, they're not made well enough. That is something that Trey Ford has to do a better job of. And I'll say this, Justin, we're going to talk again more about Nathan Rourke a little bit later on. Yeah, Buck Pierce's offense is run first, but part of run first is opening things up down the field. Zach Collaros in Buck Pierce's offense threw 70 touchdown passes across 2022 and 2023. Were it not for a terrible, inexcusable drop from Javon Katoy, Nathan Rourke would have had 4. In week one. Instead, he only gets 3, still a good number, but that is part of the reason why you establish the run, why you run the football, is to draw those defenders close to the line of scrimmage and then pop it over their heads when they're least suspecting it. We saw that happen twice with Stanley Berryhill getting behind defenders. I'm excited for what the Lions are going to bring the rest of this year.
Yeah, I'm glad Justin brought up Buck Pierce, because I thought he was as good, if not better, than Nathan Rourke in this game. Had a couple of questionable calls and short yardage. We can't avoid that. That's something that needs to be cleaned up. But the team faced adversity, and last year they folded every single time that happened. This time they didn't, and they rallied around Buck Pierce. And I thought his offensive play calling, the new system that he brought to put Nathan Rourke in, was absolutely a breath of fresh air. Everything that we wanted when Jordan Maksimek was calling plays there in BC. And that's not to dismiss Maksimek, because I think he's one of the best young offensive minds in the league. But you could see some of his struggles on the other side with his first time running that Edmonton offense. And it did not look necessarily like a natural fit with Trey Ford there. He struggled when he was asked to play in structure like Maksimek likes. And they couldn't get the run game going, which was how Trey Ford looks best, is when you use his athleticism to open up the run game and then use the run game to open up the passing game for him. That just didn't happen in BC whatsoever. And on the other side of the ball, I thought J.C. Sherratt struggled as a first-time defensive coordinator against Nathan Rourke. It seemed like he had a solid game plan early, panicked a little bit, brought a ton of pressure, and Rourke beat them every time they blitzed going down the field. A couple of those Stanley Berryhill touchdowns spring to mind as examples of that. We'll see what happens going forward with those two coordinators because they're fresh on the job there. They're working with new groups. I have complete confidence that they'll turn it around, but it was a struggle in the early going for both of them.
What should have stood out to us going into that game is the fact that you have Buck Pierce, who's a veteran offensive coordinator, going against a rookie in J.C. Sherratt, as you pointed out, J.C., because from a scheme perspective, he absolutely took him to school. On the Trey Ford front, I don't want to be too harsh on him because it is a new offense. And I'll give you guys this. I won't talk about it for too long, but it wasn't at the pro level. I was in a very similar headspace, mindset situation when I was at the University of Guelph. In my first couple of years there, I was just trying to beat everybody with my athleticism. And it was actually Kyle Walters, who's now the head or was the head coach at the time, now the GM with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, who came over from the defensive side and really started to explain, like, you got to be able to beat teams from the pocket, throw the ball in rhythm and on time, and that makes you even more dangerous as a passer. So I understand it's the pro level, and I haven't been there, but it's very similar. Trey Ford needs to get there because what's going to start to happen, fellas, you alluded to the pass rush, is teams are going to employ a mush rush, and they're just sort of going to play patty cake, for lack of a better term, at the line of scrimmage. The defenders are the people that are supposed to be rushing Trey Ford, and they're not going to go after him until he escapes. They're going to send one guy to shoot at him, and then they're going to have a contained linebacker probably to make sure he doesn't get outside. So Trey Ford needs to make, as JC said, the plays that are on schedule to make him even more dangerous when you absolutely need to be, if there's a free blitzer in a situation like that, when he gets outside the pocket. I hope he can do it quickly. I'll grant him that it's a new offense. I'll grant him this too, that he doesn't have a superstar receiver in Geno Lewis to throw what Geno Lewis told me are 90-10 balls up to him, what other people would say 50-50 balls up to him. So a lot of the stuff could be just because it's a new offense and there's some new pieces around him. But ultimately for Trey Ford to reach his peak in this league, he has to play within structure. Like I think of guys like Doug Flutie or Tracy Ham that people in some form or fashion are comparing Trey Ford to because of escapability. Those guys got to a point in their careers where they were elite from the pocket. They could beat you from anywhere on the field, but they only did things. I don't know if that's the right way to phrase it, but they only went outside the pocket when it was absolutely needed or they felt like they had to buy some time. And it wasn't, I shouldn't say every play because, you know, that's a bit of a crutch word that I'm using, but on too many plays, Trey Ford was out the gate, should be throwing it in rhythm. Like you just need to keep the chains moving, especially in the pros. You can't be looking for those big home run plays every single series. It's just not going to work that way.
Well, and in years past, I think Trey Ford was at times disrespected by the coaching staff. And I don't think he got enough opportunities to be the guy. I don't think he got enough reps in practice, in camp, whatever. This year, that's all changed. He has been anointed the guy. He is getting the first team reps all the time. This is the real test. Like this is year four, right? He was a first round pick back in 2022. Like it is time to arrive and seize this opportunity. And I couldn't agree more. I thought week one, I don't think he was a disaster, but there's a reason why Edmonton last in the CFL after week one in terms of yards. Yes, they missed 1,000 field goals. That's beside the point. That's not what cost him the game. It was a lack of offensive production, and he has to be better. Absolutely. He's got a week two bye to try to fix it. Week three, he's got to come back and be better. The two teams that fell furthest in Three Down Nation's power rankings were the Toronto Argonauts and Hamilton Tiger Cats this week. The Argos down four spots, the reigning Grey Cup champs plummeting. The Tiger Cats only down two spots, but they're now last on our rankings. Should either of Southern Ontario's teams be pressing the panic button before week two?
I don't think anyone should be pressing the panic button, but the Hamilton Tiger Cats need to be a little bit more concerned than the Toronto Argonauts. And the reason for that is, yes, the Argonauts looked putrid in their debut, but they didn't have Chad Kelly, right? They had Nick Arbuckle at quarterback. And as much as we will fondly recall him for his magical Grey Cup run and that MVP, which he well earned, this is the Nick Arbuckle that we had grown used to seeing in the CFL over the last number of years. He really struggled in that game. The pass protection struggled as well because he's not particularly mobile. If Chad Kelly is fully healthy, in theory, if that leg is good, he should be more mobile and he should be more explosive. That changes a lot of thing for the Argos. On the Hamilton side, right, this offense was clicking at the end of last year. You added a piece in Kenny Lawler that should take it over the top. You have the same head coach and offensive coordinator in place in Scott Milanovic. It shouldn't be coming out of the gate this slow. And they did. They looked really slow. They picked it up towards the end of the game, but there was a lot left to be desired with the Ticats. And this has become a trend for that organization. They consistently start the year very slow. They pick it up at the end, and then they miss the playoffs or they struggle in the playoffs because of that. Like, they need to lock in right now. They can't have another 0-5 or 1-5 start, which has become something of an annual tradition for them. So if I'm a Ticats fan, I'm worried that this is going to be more of the same, and it's not the changes that were promised to me in the offseason. If I'm an Argos fan, I'm going to hold out hope for Chad Kelly to come back in a week or two.
If you're an Argos fan, yeah, you're hoping for Chad Kelly to come back ASAP. But you want him to be fully comfortable, and it's going to take game reps for him to get there, even when he does get cleared to return to action. I'd be worried about the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and you're bang on, JC. You saw their reaction on social media. The Tiger Cats fans are sick and tired of losing games at the start of the season. You go into Calgary, a team that's last place in the CFL last year. I know they've got some new pieces, but you're expected to win that game. You know, Bo Levi Mitchell going back there was something to prove. Like, I just expected a better all-around effort from the Ticats, especially with Bo Levi Mitchell being in the same offense for a second consecutive year. Like, I expected fireworks with Kenny Lawler getting in there. I know it's a new offense for him, but I just expected more. You know, I will say I'm a little bit worried about the Toronto Argonauts until Chad Kelly gets back because it just looked like they were so limited, you know, really until DeMonte Coxey caught that jump ball. Did it infuse some energy into the offense? And yes, the touchdown drive there was late, but like, the game was essentially decided at that point. And the Montreal defense flew around, played very good football. And there are some unproven pieces on that team that we've talked about on 3downnation.com and the podcast leading into the season that need to step up and play better. And now you can't just go back, and we're going to talk about them in a minute, and bring back Kadeem Carey if you want, because he's on a new team as well. So I think the Argonauts have proven, though, that with Ryan Dinwiddie as head coach and the people that are in the front office there, that they'll be able to bounce back from this. So that's why I have bigger concerns about the Ticats.
I have bigger concerns about the Ticats, even just based off the opponent alone. Like, even with Chad Kelly, does Toronto really go into Montreal and win that game? Like, Montreal is number one in our rankings for a reason. They won more games than anybody else last year in the regular season. And they're the top dogs, right? Until somebody knocks them off. I know they didn't win the Grey Cup, but they won the Grey Cup in 2023. They've got arguably the best defense in the CFL. They've got a top receiving core. They've got a top offensive line. They've got an amazing new piece, it looks like, in Travis Teese, who was even limited in that first game, like, didn't get a ton of looks, but I thought had one spectacular rep when he did get the ball in his hands. Like, there's a lot to like in Montreal. And again, I'm not even convinced they win that game, Toronto, if Chad Kelly plays. So them losing a week one game in Montreal without their starting quarterback, no, it doesn't really bother me. Hamilton getting their butts whipped in Calgary. And let's not forget, this game was 34-13 at one point. Like, yes, there was some scoreboard massaging that happened late. And again, Bo Levi Mitchell, yeah, he got to 300 yards passing, but 50 pass attempts. Like, you cannot have a starting quarterback in his mid-30s who's throwing the ball 50 times a game. You cannot have a starting running back who's averaging 2 yards a carry. Like, Greg Bell was lights out last year for long stints. He was completely ineffective. That new-look offensive line with Liam Dobson in at guard, Coulter Woodmansey moved into center, was not opening up rushing lanes. It was struggling in pass protection. Their right tackle, Barrow, I believe it was, kept getting absolutely bull rushed to his butt in pass pro. It was wild to see it happen on back-to-back reps at one point. You can't have that happen when you're a Hoggy in pass pro. It just doesn't work. So I have big concerns about the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And yes, it's only week one. You don't want to overreact. But offensively, this was the top team in the CFL in 2024. And they have the same system from last year. And they have most of the same personnel from last year. Everybody's been talking about, well, can Nathan Rourke be 2022 Nathan Rourke? Can Nathan Rourke be 22? Well, why was Bo Levi Mitchell 2022 Bo Levi Mitchell? Like, Bo Levi Mitchell last year was a legit MOP candidate. And everyone, wow, after a bunch of off years, he's really put this together. Look at this Hall of Famer, end of his career, having this renaissance. Like, this is incredible. This is amazing. And then, as Justin laid out, he goes into his old home and he gets completely shown up. Like, he did not have a good game at all. Didn't throw any picks. That's good. But like 13 attempts to Kenny Lawler, oftentimes when he's not open. Like, there was one play that stuck out in my mind in particular where Kenny Lawler is flanked by two defenders running straight down the field, 30, 40 yards down there. And Bo Levi Mitchell threw it up anyway. And Kenny did not come close to bringing it down. And it's like, and trust me, I will never know as much as Bo has forgotten about playing quarterback. So I'm not going to tell Bo Levi Mitchell how to play quarterback. But I know that on that particular play, if you have two defenders taking the long receiver and have completely blanketed him, you've got somebody else open because they've committed two defenders to stopping Kenny Lawler. Find your open receiver. Do not throw it up to Kenny Lawler. I know he's the shiny new toy, but only six of those 13 passes, Bo Levi Mitchell threw his way, got completed. They need to be better. And then special teams. Why are we letting a kickoff randomly bounce on the turf? I know that it's week one, but that is an unforgivable mistake. Johnny Augustine was in the mix there. Johnny Augustine, he's a damn near 10-year veteran in this league. Like, you need to be the one on the field to say, like, can somebody get on the ball? Like, this is not a, sometimes, you know, NFL, CFL rules early on in the season, some guys struggle with that. The kickoff is live in the NFL too. Get on the ball. What are we doing? Get on the ball. I was losing my mind watching that play just because it was not even becoming, in my opinion, of a professional team. Now, Dennis McKnight, their coordinator, is a vet. He's a good coach. He was handpicked by Scott Milanovich. He'll have it cleaned up for week three, or pardon me, for week two. But that's not a mistake that should happen even week one. See ball, get ball. You learn that when you're 6 years old.
There was at least one positive thing on special teams, which was that Isaiah Wooden took a kickoff 105 yards to the house, and I think he could be an exciting addition. But you're right, Hodge. There was no excuse for those errors. And frankly, there was no excuse for the offensive performance either, because as you alluded to, it's not as if they were going up against the Montreal Alouettes defense. Calgary looked really good, but there was a lot of inexperience in that unit. Two rookies in the secondary, a bunch of guys who only play a handful of games, some just one game under their belt previously in the CFL, and they kicked Hamilton's butt. That just cannot happen. But we talked a lot about Edmonton in our first section, about the best teams in the CFL, and then we ripped the Elks. Well, we're talking about the most struggling teams right now. Let's elevate the Alouettes here a little bit, because you touched on it, Hodge, but we didn't really drill down. How good did they look? And how crazy is it that it seems like every other media outlet has them somewhere in the middle of the pack, even at the back of the pack in their power rankings going into the season? We had them at number one. That looks like a pretty good pick, because the Alouettes were sensational in that game, especially defensively. They fly around under Noel Thorpe. I think this team has done what they need to do to stay in the Grey Cup mix. Davis Alexander is going to roll or grow in that starter role, and that defense is going to ensure that he doesn't have to do too much at any point. And sometimes with young quarterbacks, that can be the death blow when they're forced to do too much. He won't have to, because they'll always be in games and they'll always be on the front foot because of that defense. That bodes really well for them going forward.
I liked Davis Alexander's approach in the opening game, and we talked a lot about Trey Ford and what he needs to change. I thought Davis Alexander played within himself. He didn't force too many throws in there, even though he has a big arm. And then when it was there and needed on some second down and medium situations, he escaped pressure, got outside the pocket, and picked up a first down. And those were some backbreakers. Those are some killers for the Argos. And I thought that was a major difference, just even in the quarterbacking matchup in that game, is Nick Arbuckle just simply doesn't have that ability to get away. Davis Alexander does, plus he's also got the upside of having this deep shot arm. So, you know, to your point, JC, I think there's a lot to like with Davis Alexander and the Alouettes as a whole. The defense was awesome. James Fletcher Jr. doing his thing. But Davis Alexander, for a first time out as the anointed franchise guy, looked very calm and comfortable. I thought let the game come to himself, didn't force any throws. Yeah, I know there was the interception that was in there, and you don't want to see any of those. But at some point, you know, there's going to be a turnover whether you like it or not throwing the football in any professional league. Other than that, I really liked what I saw from Davis Alexander. Now, you got to string it together. You know, just like Trey Ford's going to have the opportunity to bounce back after the bye week, from Davis Alexander, I want to see him put these multiple games, if not more, together.
Yeah, I also want to see him push the ball down the field a little bit more, right? We know from talking to Austin Mack, Tyson Philpott, that that's something that he can do better than
just
Cody
don't
Fajardo.
Force
that being
it,
said,
though.
Well, and okay, what I was going to say
is, we had a caller
is,
call into the Sports Cage Radio Roundtable show after the Riders game. And he wanted Trevor Harris just to drop back and chuck the ball up like a punt. And I went off because I'm like, that is just making my blood boil, okay? You can't do that. So sorry, that thought came to mind when you mentioned it, Hodge.
What I was going to say is the advantage he has, especially with Nick Arbuckle in town, he's not Chad Kelly, as we know. He knows that his defense can win this game, right? So whereas if you're Trey Ford playing against the BC Lions, where Nathan Rourke is putting up touchdowns on your defense time and time again, there's pressure on you to put together big scores, maybe take more risks with the football. Davis Alexander's going, oh, I'm pretty sure my team's only going to allow 10 points today. So if I can score 11, that's
you still
a doubt,
don't want to
right?
force it deep. Take it that, when
and
it's there.
That's what I'm saying. I would like to see him prove he can do it. I'd like to see him demonstrate that dimension in the offense, but there's less incentive for him to take risk when his defense is so good, as opposed to a team like Hamilton, a team like Edmonton, at least in week one, struggled more defensively. We're also going to talk about the Riders in this next segment really quick. So I'd be remiss if I didn't touch on the Red Blacks. Yo, Ottawa, you're playing great. Maybe next time, take fewer than 12 penalties. That's all I'm going to say. Just take fewer than 12 penalties. You can't go on the road and take 12 penalties. That's the reason you lost. Otherwise, you would have won.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed. And one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. And they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Whether you're looking to buy your dream home or rent a sweet apartment, give Redfin your gotta-have-it wish list of property features, and you'll receive real-time notifications tailored just for you. Ready to see it up close and personal? Scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Don't wait to find your perfect match. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
The Saskatchewan Roughriders have signed Kadeem Carey following yet another injury to AJ Ouellette, which you, Dunk, reported was a head injury. Canadian Thomas Bertrand-Houdon looked great in Saskatchewan's season opener, recording 74 yards from scrimmage and 2 touchdowns in a relief role. But how much can Carey elevate the Riders' offense next week?
Okay, I know we want to talk about Kadeem Carey here, and he's demonstrated that he is a really good running back in this league, coming off a 1,000-yard rushing season last year with the Toronto Argonauts. But what does Thomas the Train have to do to get more burn here? Honestly, it's been in short spurts, but whenever he's gotten the opportunity to tote the rock or catch it out of the backfield, he's produced at a high level, and he looked great coming into the game when AJ Ouellette went out. I think this injury is different for Ouellette. It was helmet-to-helmet contact from Darius Pickett that led to this head injury. We'll see how long Ouellette's going to be out of the lineup. But Thomas Bertrand-Houdon, I mean, JC's laughing, but I'm serious, man. Like, why can't this guy be the starter? And I know Carey's going to be familiar with the offense. He has ties to a bunch of people over there, Corey Mace and Mark Mueller, most importantly, to relearn the offense or some of the offense that, you know, he would have been in Calgary when those two were together. I get it. You want a veteran American there. You don't have another Canadian backup on the roster. Thomas Bertrand plays a lot on special teams. But the guy looked great. Like the swing pass from Trevor Harris, making people miss in the open field and then showing his power to get into the end zone. Like he made Jovan Santos Knox miss in a phone booth there on his touchdown run. Like we're not talking about a rookie American linebacker. We're talking about a bona fide all-star who's played multiple years in this league that he made look absolutely silly. So I grant the Riders that, you know, you got the roster spot. You want to bring the guy in. There's relationships there. So I think Kadeem Carey can elevate the offense from a sense that throughout Carey's career, with all due respect to AJ Ouellette, he has been fairly consistently healthy. And especially last year when he was, what, 31 years old, fellas? He's 32, I think, going on 33. I can stand to be corrected on that. So I think from that standpoint, it can help the offense. I think it's unfortunate for AJ Ouellette that this helmet-to-helmet contact happened, because he was showing intriguing signs, especially with the body transformation and that hurdle that we saw in the preseason in Winnipeg and, you know, even a little bit the start of that game before he went out against Ottawa. But Carey at the moment brings that consistency, although he's going to have to show he can stay healthy at an advanced age for a pro running back.
Yeah, Carey turns 33 in October. That being said, I don't particularly care because he played all 18 games for the Argonauts last year, 1,400 yards from scrimmage, 8 touchdowns. I think that Kadeem Carey is a much better player than AJ Ouellette. And I would have said that this offseason too. AJ Ouellette's younger, but it's not always the age that matters. Sometimes it's the mileage. And I'm sorry, at no point last year did it look like AJ Ouellette was going to be able to healthily compete week after week. And we voiced that as a concern this offseason. And I appreciate AJ Ouellette looking shredded as hell. I wouldn't hire AJ Ouellette to be my trainer because he would kick my butt. But I would need someone in less good shape who's less serious. But you know the point I'm trying to make. Fitness-wise, we know he's a fitness guru. There's no question about that. But simply as a player, right? The best availability, or the best ability, is availability. And he has not been available nearly enough with the Riders. I know he's extremely tight off the field with running backs coach Andrew Harris, who the Riders brought in this offseason. Maybe he'll get another shot before the season is done. But if I'm the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, I am happy as a clam with Kadeem Carey and Thomas Bertrand-Hudon as a duo coming out of the backfield. And you mentioned it, Dunk, with what he does on special teams. Bertrand-Hudon's always going to have a spot on the roster. Maybe he's not your starter, but he can be a 5-6 touch a game guy, and he can certainly get you out of a game. I know that because he literally just proved it in having a great performance against the Red Blacks. So I think that this move honestly makes the Saskatchewan Rough Riders better. I'm not convinced that they shouldn't have signed him right away. Honestly, this offseason is back in February when they had a chance to.
Yeah, I'm sure the Riders are going to be happy with the signing of Kadeem Carey. I don't think it was necessary, to Dunk's point. Like, I think Thomas Bertrand-Hudon could handle the load. I think Mario Anderson, who they have on the practice roster, has showed some intriguing things in college. You can potentially give him that. You know, guys, that I am a advocate for the running backs don't matter mindset. And I think Thomas the Train is a perfect example of that, because here's a guy who every time he gets an opportunity looks like an absolute stud at the CFL level, rips off runs, scores touchdowns, does everything he has to. And he was what, a third stringer his last year at Delaware State, which is hardly a powerhouse program. There are those guys out there. You don't necessarily have to go and pay for an all-star. Now, I don't think Kadeem Carey is going to be making bushels of money at 33 years old as a guy who got cut at the end of training camp. He's probably there on a bit of a sweetheart deal, and maybe you add the proven talent instead of an unproven rookie when it's at the same cost. But I don't think this was a move that was absolutely necessary for the Riders. I think they had enough pieces there already. And frankly, I would have spent my money on other areas to potentially shore up some of the other injuries that they had in that first game. Because let's not forget, along with AJ Ouellette going down, we don't know the status of guys like Roland Milligan Jr. We don't know the status of Kean Schaefer-Baker. We don't know the status of left tackle Peyton Collins, all of whom did not finish that game. Those are all concerning injuries, and there may be more holes that this team has to plug.
I do think that the Riders needed an American running back in there, because Mario Anderson really didn't jump off the page in the preseason. He was nowhere close to what Travis Tice has looked like, for example, with the Montreal Alouettes. So I think you got to bring him in. It's going to be a bargain deal. He had gotten a $20,000 signing bonus from the Toronto Argonauts, which I'm sure helped, you know, get a sweetheart deal, as you alluded to, with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. He has those relationships there. He's a dude that has shown he can carry the load even at his advanced running back age and help a team win a Grey Cup. He just did last year with Toronto as the featured guy. Most importantly, stay healthy, guys. And, you know, again, I'll ask this question respectfully, and I was talking about it earlier with AJ Ouellette, because some Rider fans were calling into the postgame show on 620 CKRM and putting out the question themselves: is Thomas Bertrand-Hudon a better running back at this stage than AJ Ouellette? And I think it's a somewhat valid question because Bertrand-Hudon stays healthy. Now, it's different because he's not the starter, and he probably won't get the chance to be the starter because Kadeem Carey's there, and he's so valuable on special teams. But I think it's a valid question to at least have a conversation about.
I think people often consider running the ball the only thing that running backs do, and that's a third of what they do. They also catch passes out of the backfield. And they also pass pro, right? Pass pro is an extremely important part of being a running back, especially in the CFL, where you throw the ball so much and your roster sizes are limited, right? You're not able to just carry a pass blocking specialist, right, to check in on second downs. You want a running back in there. So I think that when you take in all of those factors, game for game, Thomas Bertrand-Hudon might not be better than AJ Ouellette. But again, if AJ Ouellette is only going to be available for 8 or 9 games a season, which seems to be his new ceiling, then I don't see the point, right, of having him around. He's an American. He's not a Canadian. He doesn't help you on the roster that much. I think Kadeem Carey, again, is a better fit. I think Kadeem Carey is more well-rounded. I think Kadeem Carey is in better shape, at least from a health perspective. Again, he played all 18 games last year, despite turning 32 late last season as part of Toronto's Grey Cup run. So I think, and by the way, and if the guy's not Kadeem Carey, bring in Walter Fletcher. Like, I know JC's out here talking about how Thomas Bertrand-Hudon was a third stringer. Well, Mario Anderson was a first stringer at Memphis, and he looked terrible in the preseason. So I don't care about, we talk about college. This is the pros. You're judged by what you do in the pros. Thomas Bertrand-Hudon made impact plays. Mario Anderson did not. Granted, it's preseason, but if you're not making plays in the preseason, I don't know how you're making plays in the regular season. That's my take.
Before we move on, I do think somebody has to push back a little bit on the narrative that AJ Ouellette is now completely injury prone. And I don't disagree with it entirely, because I think it's tough to come back from some of the hip injuries that he battled through last season. But that was really his only year where he was dealing with those injuries. He was largely healthy in Toronto prior to that. And this latest injury is a head injury. It has nothing to do with the body breaking down. He took a helmet off the dome. Those are unpredictable things. That's not on AJ Ouellette or his age or anything to do with that. It's just an unfortunate play. So I think it's a little bit unfair right now, having not seen AJ Ouellette in his current body shape be able to even play a full game and see what those hips look like, to accuse him of being a guy who can't stay healthy anymore. It remains up in the air, but the concussion has nothing to do with what was going on last season.
That's fair, but one thing we have to remember that you didn't touch on, AJ Ouellette's never been a starter in this league until last year. He was a rotational player in Toronto for 2 years behind Andrew Harris. Yes, Andrew Harris didn't play every single game, but like last year was his first time being a quote unquote franchise running back, and he only played half the games. So I don't think it's fair to say, well, he was healthy in 22-23. He didn't get that many touches either season because he had a Hall of Famer in front of him who started the majority of the games.
He got more touches than Harrison that last year, especially. I mean, he was an East All-Star. Don't forget that.
He rushed for 1,000 yards.
Well, let me take a look. Maybe my memory's a bit off.
I mean, they were still in a package rotation.
JC's point is warranted. Guys, to me, the bigger conversation is here. If you're the Riders and you think AJ Ouellette's going to be back in a week or two, are you really signing Kadeem Carey? No. Like, there must be some longer-term thought here. And perhaps it's as simple as, hey, we're not sure about AJ Ouellette in week two and beyond that, and we play the Argos in week three, we can get some great intel. But I would think with the relationships there, you're not bringing Carey in just for a couple weeks. That's my take from the outside without having been down on the ground in Saskatchewan there. I think that's the bigger conversation here. AJ Ouellette deserves all the time he needs to come back from this head injury. And we would all like to see him back healthy. But when you're bringing in an American veteran that you have a relationship with, to me, that kind of points the arrow towards being longer term.
By the way, officially, JC is half right, I'm half right. Ouellette did start 15 games in 2023.
So you're both half wrong.
I guess that's a way to say it as well. Fair enough. But in those games, he only had 13 touches a game because he was sharing with Deontay McMahon, and also Daniel Adebaboye, as well as some Andrew Harris. So yes, he was the primary starter, but his touches per game, relatively low at 13. So yes, he had 1,000 yards. Yes, he was the primary starter in 2023. That was not the case in 2022, which was his best season. And the season, of course, where the Argonauts won the Grey Cup.
I think JC's point was that it's just not fair to say that he's injury prone. It's been one season,
he
changed his body, tried to fix it, and then he takes a headshot. Like, that's not necessarily his fault. I think it's the same with Trevor Harris. Back-to-back years with injuries where, like, he gets fallen on and the other one is just an awful tibial plateau fracture. Like, you're not injury-prone for that kind of stuff. I think if you're having non-contact injuries or you're taking a normal tackle and you get injured, then we're right to call a player injury-prone. but I don't think Trevor Harris is. AJ Ouellette's a little bit of a different conversation, but I don't think you can lump the head hit in with it.
Mm-hmm. I will agree with that, and I should note, head injuries are awful to deal with. So just as a human being, we obviously wish AJ Ouellette the very best, right? To get, you know, he worked his butt off all offseason. He got 3 carries, right? And that's unfortunate. So obviously, as we would any player who gets injured, we wish them the best in their recovery, whether it's to get back on the field or whether it's just to ensure that they have a great quality of life when they're done playing. We hope that he gets better.
I am most looking forward to, fellas, hearing Kadeem Carey's comments about his former team. You never know what he will say.
No, you don't.
Austin Mack ripped the TSN top 50 CFL players list in a conversation with Three Down Nation reporter Pablo Herrera Vergara, stating voters are, quote, probably people who don't watch football, close quote. Hodge, is Mack right to rip the rankings?
Well, yes and no. I did have a handful of guys on my ballot who did not make the final list. And for full transparency, I've been doing a ballot here since pre-pandemic. I'm not sure my first year was. But you're only given 40 spots on your ballot. And then of those projections, there were 29 voters apparently this year. They make the top 50. So inevitably, you're going to have some guys who aren't on your ballot just because you didn't have as many spots as the final rankings did. But to me, the guys who I had on my ballot who did not make the final rankings was Winnipeg defensive back Dietrich Nichols, Argonauts receiver Demonte Coxey, Red Blacks defensive tackle Michael Wakefield, Montreal receiver Austin Mack was on my ballot, Evan Holm, DB for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Micah Johnson, defensive tackle at the Saskatchewan Roughriders, and I had Calgary kicker Rene Paradis. They make you pick at least one kicker. He was my kicker, and inevitably no kicker made the list, so whatever. To me, I always think the big guys in the middle of the defense often get underrepresented, especially a year like last year where Michael Wakefield tied for the league lead in sacks. I thought he was very impactful. I thought that Micah Johnson was completely unmovable in the run game, also put up a bunch of sacks. Austin Mack, I think a lot of people probably forgot about him because he was not anywhere near the top of the receiver rankings last year, but obviously that's partly because A, he was in the NFL, right, for the first half of the season. And then B, he wasn't that effective the second half of the season. And historically, that is the case, right? And that's why I defended putting Nathan Rourke number one on my rankings. Apparently, I'm the only person who did that. After watching week one, I say, how about them apples? I had him at number one. He looked like the MOP. It's just 1 week, but by gosh, he looked good. Should have been 4 touchdowns, 0 picks, over 300 yards. Plus over 50 yards on the ground. He looked incredible. To me, I'm not put off by how he looked in the second half of last season. And if you look back over the years, right, Matthew Betts came back halfway through last season from the NFL. He didn't look that good the rest of the season, but he looked very good week one. Another player I'll point to from years past, Weston Dressler tried the NFL once, came back for the second half of the season, was basically just a punt returner. Why? Because he was too heavy. He'd put on weight for the NFL. And he couldn't run his routes like he used to. Andy Fantuz would be another one. A guy who went down to the NFL, didn't produce when he came back, and then once he had an offseason to get back into the CFL mode, so to speak, was dynamite. So it's happened time and time and again. I can see why some voters maybe forgot about Austin Mack. I also think some voters are very much reliant on, well, what have you done lately, right? If you haven't made any big plays lately, why are you on the top 50 list? Personally, I did have Austin Mack there because I am projecting that he will be a top 50 player this year, which to me is what the list is. It's not who were the best players in 2024. The list is who are the best players going into 2025. So I had Mack on my list. He did not make the list. I also had Nathan Rourke at 1. Some people thought that was bananas. Well, now, how about them apples? That's what I say.
For the record, I had Nathan Rourke at number 2 on my ballot. I didn't put him at number 1. I reserved that spot for Jake Ceresna, who I think is in a class of his own among pass rushers in the CFL, and especially in his ability to rush both inside and outside. But he was pretty high up my list. I did not have Mack, admittedly, on my ballot, though he was just off the list and may have made it if I wasn't, for some reason, forced to pick a kicker and 3 running backs against my will for this very limited 40-person ballot that we all submit. I think sometimes voters, when looking at this list, rightly or wrongly, punish guys who have only done something once. Austin Mack is a guy who, yes, he was highly touted coming back from the NFL, but didn't do a whole lot and only had one season of CFL production. Lots of voters don't like to reward a small sample size. I went the opposite way because I had both Khalil Pimpleton and Justin Rankin on my ballot. That didn't look so great in week one. I have hope that it'll look pretty good going forward. But I can understand why Mack would be upset after the season that he had in 2023 and all the hype that he had coming back last year, not to be recognized for his accomplishments.
This is simple to me, fellas. In the CFL as a whole, we need to be better with how these types of things are going to be done. Awards, all-stars, and this list. There needs to be a common criteria, as Hodge alluded to. His criteria was to rank the top 40 because that's all the voters are given. And for those that are curious, no, I do not vote. I suck at rankings. I struggle with it. But if the process was more clear, perhaps I would. Because Hodge's view of this was the top 40 players for 2025. Other people look at it differently. They base a lot of numbers on 2024. With all due respect, we had Kadeem Carey on there at 19. And when I say we, I mean the media, as a guy who was released. The 19th best player on this list was released. So the research needs to be better. Or if that does happen, and I can understand how this is a scenario where it would, the list needs to be adjusted. Carey needs to come off, and the 51st best player needs to get bumped up the list so it doesn't look silly, okay? Let's have a common criteria. We don't need to put an exact number for each position because we're talking about the best players. Like JC out here caping up for Jake Ceresna being number one. I got respect for that because he has an argument behind it. This is how we end up leaving players off, is because you have to rank other positions just because the ballot says you have to. We're talking about the top 50 players, bar none. And I don't want to compare it to the NFL, but when they do rankings, that's all it is. It's the top players. It doesn't matter what position you are, like when NFL Network does it. So let's just go about it in a way where everybody understands the criteria and strip away where you have to put a certain amount of players in there. And then my belief is that we will get the best possible top 50 list. People are going to disagree. That's the great thing about this list and the ranking and Austin Mack popping off to our boy Pablo in Montreal. But let's have a common criteria so we can all start from a similar place of understanding. I think it's that simple, similar with all-stars. It ain't all West Division. It ain't all CFL. You're a West Division All-Star, you're an East Division All-Star, you're a CFL All-Star, okay? And while we're at it, fellas, we need to talk to Stewie Johnston to get the awards process fixed up. Maybe we can do that by November so we get the actual best candidates for MLP, MLC on down the list in the mix when they're being voted on. Like, to me, this is a systemic issue in the Canadian Football League, okay? We can help fix it, and I realize I'm part of that, so I'm willing to do that. But it needs to be fixed. It's simple.
Well, you're not part of that because you didn't complete your ballot.
I'm saying I would if there was a clear criteria. I'd be in on it. Or
I don't.
The other thing that
really,
we need to do. The other thing that we
I don't
to,
think you really
need
more
quick.
Clear criteria than just the top 50 players. But
no,
okay,
because people rank them differently. People rank them differently.
I don't think so.
They rank them based on the past and history and what they did last year, and you're banking it on 2025, right? Hodge, like, there needs to be a criteria, right?
Yeah, there's no logical reason that Stanley Bryant should have ranked as high as he did on a list projecting to next year, right? That's a reputation vote. And with all due respect to Stanley Bryant, he has a Hall of Fame reputation for a reason, but he's not, I think he was 28th or 29th on that list. He's not that player anymore, right? And there are tackles that didn't make the list that were far more effective last season. So I think Dunk has a point. There's a lot of people that rank it based on your traditional reputation and not try to project as to what these guys will be next year. I do think there is some method to the madness of having positional quotas because they don't want a list where all nine quarterbacks are on it. Trey Ford making that list is utterly ridiculous in my mind. Like, I love him. The athleticism is off the charts, but at no point has he ever in his career looked like a top 50 quarterback for more than a stretch of 10 plays in a row. That was ridiculous in my mind, and I think that's part of the reason why you try and insert other positions to make sure that it's just not nine quarterbacks and then everybody else.
For the players, the eye in the sky never lies, okay? All of the voters should have to have their ballots go public so that people can be held accountable for this voting and for the awards and for the All-Stars. Because then I think the people that aren't doing the proper background research and that are voting based on reputation are going to be called out, for lack of a better term. Like, we need to be better too, right? We can criticize and say that coach made a stupid error and this player should have caught that ball. Why aren't we held to the same standard? We being the media.
I would be happy to have my ballot be public. And for the record, my top five were Nathan Rourke, Wynton McManus, Brady Oliveira, Roland Milligan Jr., Bo Levi Mitchell. And I did not have Trey Ford on my ballot, nor did I think he should be. I don't think he was close to my ballot. And that's not because I don't think he has incredible potential. And getting into the 2024-2025 thing, to me, if this voting was conducted in November 2024, then it's very clearly about the 2024 season. This voting is conducted late May into June. So to be, it should be implied that it's like who are currently, as in 2025, are the best players. But I get where you're coming from. The All-Star thing doesn't bother me. I know it does bother you, Justin. The one thing I will say, while we're pointing out mistakes, I don't think it was a mistake having Kadeem Carey on the list. He was on my ballot. I think the mistake was replacing him in Toronto with somebody who runs backwards on second down. That, to me, was an unbelievably bad play by Mayan Williams. And the first thing I thought was, Kadeem Carey's not running backwards. Maybe they should have kept him around. Maybe Mayan Williams would be a Hall of Famer. I don't know. But first impression, that was not positive. It's now time for Hodges Heritage Moment. On this day in 2024, very recent history here, folks, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers signed Tony Jones following his release from Edmonton. The 6-foot, 230-pound defender played all 18 regular season games with Edmonton in 2023, recording 52 tackles, one sack, and one forced fumble. Though he initially joined the Blue Bombers in a depth role, Jones became the starting weak side linebacker by the end of July and moved to middle linebacker when Adam Bakehill suffered a torn ACL. He made 60 tackles, one sack, one interception, and one forced fumble in 2024, and Jones is expected to be the team's day one starter at middle linebacker in 2025. JC, could you believe that the Elks cut Tony Jones after camp last year?
It was a surprise at the time, but in hindsight, I mean, they got Nick Anderson, who ended up being the most outstanding rookie, and they've got some good players behind him right now, including former first overall pick Joel DeBlanco, who looked absolutely lights out in the preseason, and I hope gets a larger role going forward. So they didn't necessarily need Tony Jones, and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers sure did.
Let's try to have a real 3-minute drill. The Edmonton Elks unveiled new uniforms, which a team wore in BC with a retro flavor. Hodge, do you like the new digs?
I like them a lot. My only question is, why are you unveiling these in June? Like, why not unveil them in March when you might actually get some media attention that you don't normally get in the offseason? That, to me, makes no sense. The Hamilton Tiger Cats added veteran QB Jake Dolagala to their practice roster. Is that a smart move?
I don't understand why you bring in a guy like Jake Dolagala on the PR. Like, there's no development there anymore. I'd rather they have kept around one of their youngsters from the preseason and get them more development. This doesn't make a ton of sense to me. The Toronto Argonauts unveiled their 111th Grey Cup rings on Sunday night. What did you think of the bling?
They're dope, man. Bling, bling, money, anything. They look great. But, you know, my thought was, they're so massive now. Like, when do people even wear these things? Manitoba Premier Wab Canoe refused to wear a Saskatchewan Roughriders jersey presented to all attendees at a First Minister's meeting. Instead, he flashed the Blue Bombers' W sign. Was that wise?
Yes, Mr. Canoe knows where his bread is buttered. He knows where his voters' hearts lie. This was an ingenious move from the Manitoba Premier. CFL Commissioner Stuart Johnston told the Sports Cage the league's website is going to be overhauled following its preseason blackouts. Is that smart?
Yes, it's smart. It should have been done years ago. The league is way behind on tech. They need reliable streaming. They need reliable stats. And they need a draft tracker that's not going to bail on me in the middle of live coverage. Stu, get on it. Tickets for the 112th Grey Cup in Winnipeg went on sale to the general public late last week, and there are only a couple of thousand seats left in the upper deck. Do you think the matchup will sell out, Hodge or Dunk?
Yes, we both do. Let's keep it moving. Milt Stegall thanked the CFL community for its overwhelming support following the sudden passing of his oldest son, Chase. Hodge, what would you say to Milt?
I just tell him that we love you, Milt, and we're all rooting for you. We're all here for you. We're with you and your family in these unimaginable times. Marcus Crandall has officially retired from the CFL at age 51, 17 years after he took his last snap. What do you make of that?
This was the most ridiculous one-day contract I have ever seen signed in CFL history. The man was a coach for like three different organizations in between the time he stopped playing, and now it's done, it's dusted. We did not need a one-day send-off for Marcus Crandall. Sean Thomas Erlington had 17 carries for Montreal in week one, which is more than Walter Fletcher had in any game last season. Could that be a sign the Alouettes are becoming more committed to the run?
It's possible. Balanced offense under Jason Moss? Let's see it happen. The CFL on TSN unveiled some new bells and whistles for Friday Night Football, including a montage of players singing the iconic theme song. Luke Wilson was in the mix. Some flashy new graphics. Hodge, did you like it all?
I did. I thought it was a win. I thought it was fresh. I thought it was fun. I really liked it, and I'm excited to hear CFL players sing, or in some cases speak, the Friday Night Football song for the rest of this year. Finally, on a somber note, we'd like to acknowledge that Hamilton Tiger Cats general manager Ted Gavaya has been diagnosed with what he called a serious form of cancer in April. Teddy, we're here for you as well through this unimaginable circumstance. We wish you all the best health. We wish you to take all the time that you need, and we hope to see you back in action at a Tiger Cats game sometime soon. For Justin Dunk and JC Abbott, I'm John Hodge. We'll see you for next week's episode and hopefully some better picks for JC and I later this week.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number. Not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.